We begin the current daf Masechta Beis daf Lamed Tes. We begin three lines down from the top of the Amud. The Gemara continues the discussion of the previous Mishnah. That is, the Mishnah, they were speaking about the tchum that an object has as the same as the owner of that object, which is the tchum is how far a person can walk on Shabbos and Yom Tov. 2,000 amas passed of where that person's boundary, whether it be the person's home or his body or his city, 2,000 amas after that is the distance that one can go. Same thing applies to the objects of that person. Now, the Mishnah concluded with a case where a woman was making a bread or she was making a cooked dish. Then she borrowed from her neighbor some ingredients, water, salt, spices. So on that, the Tanna Kamma said that now that baked dish will be limited now to both of their tchumen because you have two people's ingredients, which the ingredients of a person is like the tchum of themselves, which their objects, their kalim, the behemoths have their own tchum. Now this thing has both of them inside of it, and therefore would be limited to the tchum that each one of them could go. Whereas, however, and that we're quoting from our Mishnah, Behuda paita b'mayim. Behuda exempts the water, that since the water has no substance, we don't view it as the tchum of that person. Rather, it's going to be like the tchum of the person that's making all the other ingredients. For example, if someone's making a dough, making a challah, then that will be like that person's tchum, and the water that she borrowed from a neighbor will not be significant enough to limit the tchum as the owner of the water itself. Now, on that, the Gemara asks, Mayim in Melech Loi, is really true? Because the case of that the Tanna Kamma was talking about, he spoke about three different ingredients, water, salt, spices. Now, it sounds like Yehuda is only arguing regarding the water, that he agrees regarding the salt and the spices, that it will limit the other person's ingredients, that it could only go according to both tchumen. But Vatani Loi in the Braisa that says Yehuda Omer, he says, Mayim u'melech betelen, that both water and salt will be nullified, Bein b'isa bein b'gdeir, whether it's regarding the case of making a dough or whether it's making a cooked dish, in either one of these things, not only will the water be considered not significant enough because it's not so recognizable, but even salt will also be considered batel and will not limit the tchum of the person, of the owner of the salt itself. So why did in our Mishnah it only say that he exempts it by water, which sounds like but by salt that it will limit the tchum? Nothing much is like kasha, because actually it depends what type of salt. Ha, the Braisa that says that it will be bottle even by salt is Toma Bemelech Stimus, Toma Tzedaim salt, which is very thin, and therefore, again, it's not so recognizable. And that's why it's bottle. And as Rashi explains, actually, he could prove that the Melech Stimus, the Tzedaim salt, was very thin, where, as the Gemara Chulin Daf Kafei Mabez explains, what's the reason why we do Mayim Achrayim, which is the waters we wash after we eat a meal, and that it's actually a chayva, it's an obligation, is because of the Tzedaim salt that can be on the person's fingers, which can blind the person. Now, since it's very thin and it gets stuck to one's hands and is not recognizable, that's why you have to wash it off. Other salt you could see, so you can get it off. But since it's so thin, you can't see it, that's why you have to make sure to wash one's hands, because then one might put one's fingers to one's eyes. So again, that's how you see that the Melech Tzedaim is very thin. That's what the Braisa was talking about. That will be the same as water, and therefore it's going to be batel. Ha, but Melech Astaraikness, our Mishnah was saying that only water, Rabbi Yehuda says, is going to be exempt. But however, the salt will not be batel, and it will limit the tchum. We're talking about these thick, granular types of salts where you do see the pieces, and therefore that's not considered batel, and that's why it will be significant to limit the tchum of the other woman. Now, however, the Gemara continues asking, but Vatana learned another Braisa. Yehuda says, Mayim u'melech betelen be'isa. This that I said that water and salt will be batel is only in a dough. But ve'ein betelen be'gedeir m'nei raitva. However, these ingredients will not be nullified when they're mixed into a cooked dish because of the gravy that's in that cooked dish, which means to say the gravy is recognizable. You see the liquid over there. Now, our Mishnah said that Rabbi Yehuda holds that you're going to be exempt by water. Sounds like in old cases, because actually the case of the Tanna Kamma that he was talking about was talking about dough and talking about a cooked dish. From the fact that he talks about spices, obviously he's not talking about bread that he's baking, rather the spices are being used for a cooked dish. And he also talks about a dough, because he's talking about water and salt. Now, if Rabbi Yehuda says in that Mishnah that you're going to be exempt, for the water will not limit it, sounds like it's going on both cases of the Kedera and of the Issa, but that's contradicted by this Braisa that says that no, that the water and the salt will only be nullified, will not limit the tchum, only by a dough and not by a cooked dish. That actually by a cooked dish, where you see the gravy, see the water, it is significant and will limit it. So that the Gemara says, look, Kasha, that's also not a difficulty. Because our Mishnah was talking about B'ava. We're talking about a thick cooked dish, where there the gravy is not recognizable, it's not liquefied, and therefore that's more doughy. Ha baraka. The Braisa says that even water is not going to be bottle. We're talking about that it's very soft, it is liquidy, and since it's liquidy, so then the water is recognizable, and therefore it will limit the tchum. And that's what we answer with these two questions, qualifying when is it the Rabbi Yehuda says that you're going to be exempt by water and not by salt, where it depends on the cases. There are some times that he hold that the salt will be bottle, and actually there are times when he's going to hold the water will be bottle and will not be bottle, again, depending on the cases, where we said by salt if it's recognizable or not, and same thing by the water, which would depend if the salt, what type of grain of salt it is, and also regarding the water, if it's a cooked dish that's thick, then you don't see it. If it's thin, then you do, then it's not going to be bottle. Now the Gemara continues with the next Mishnah, again continuing on the theme of the previous Mishnah, talking about the halachas of tchumen regarding halachas of yomtiv and the objects of the people, not just the tchum of the person themselves, but different objects, what tchum do they have? So the Mishnah tells us, hagachelas, a kol, keragli habayim, as the objects of a person. A kol is the same thing, it will have the limitations of the tchum of the owner. However, the contrast is bishalheves, the flame of one's coal or just a flame. For example, if let's say someone lit his candle from another person's flame, that's b'chal makom. That you could take anywhere. That will not be limited by that person. Although you're getting the flame from him, that will not limit this person of taking it as far as he wants to. That will not be limited in that tchum. Similar differences, two other differences our Mishnah tells us between a gachelas, a coal, and a flame. Where gachelas shal hekdesh moilim ba. The coal of hekdesh, something that's owned by hekdesh, there is halacha of me'ila, which means that if someone has hanav from that coal, he has to bring a carbon asham. However, shalheves, but if it's a flame, loinenen, then leketchila, initially, midrabanan, you now go ahead and have hanav from the flame of hekdesh, but if you did have hanav, it's v'loy me'ilin, you do not bring a carbon me'ila, because since there's no substance to it, you didn't have hanav from a deva mamashi, because it's just a flame, it's not a solid, it's not an object, therefore they're not going to bring a carbon asham. And the third difference we find is, hamaitzi gechilas l'shusram, if someone on Shabbos or when there's an Isra Haitzah, if someone transports a coal from Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah, he's going to be chayiv. For Shalavas Pat, however, if he takes out a flame, he's going to be exempt. The Gemara explains like what's the case of taking out a flame where you're not taking out a coal with it, you're not taking out something that's holding the flame. So that gets again the three differences where it was introduced because of what we're discussing in the halachas of tchumen, that tchum has the limitations, the object of the owner, which is by a coal, but a flame doesn't have substance, therefore it's not considered an object of the owner to have limitations. Now the Gemara brings trouble in the Braisa, actually, chamisha dvarim nevim b'gecheles. There are five things that are said regarding a coal, and then the contrast of the flame, where our Mishnah said three, the Braisa adds on two more cases. First of all, hagecheles karag lehabayim, a coal regarding halachas of tchumen has the limitations of how far the owner could go. V'shalev is b'chal makam, however, a flame doesn't have those limitations. You can take it wherever. Kechel shal hekdesh mo'ilim ba. The coal of hekdesh, there is halach of me'ila if one misappropriates it, he has to bring a carbon. V'shalev is loy no'n b'lim island. However, a flame, one initially should not have enough from it, rabbinically. We want to keep people away from trying to have enough from hekdesh. But if one does have enough from the flame, then there's no carbon me'ila. Kechel shal avoid zara, regarding a coal of an idol, where the Pasuk tells in Devarim Yud Gimel V'Loyidbak B'Yadcha Me'umah Min Acherim, you're not supposed to have any pleasure from something that's forbidden of Avodah Zarah, so Asura, the coal will be forbidden, B'Shalev is Muteris, and again, the flame will be permitted. A fourth case is Hamaitzi Gechelis L'Shus Rabim Chayiv. If someone takes out a coal, he transports on Shabbos from Rishus HaYachar, a private domain, to a public domain, he's going to be liable. B'Shalev is Pata again, but taking out a flame, he's going to be exempt. He didn't take out anything of Mamash. And the fifth case is hamuder hanav mechaver. If someone makes himself forbidden to have pleasure, he takes an oath of prohibiting pleasure from his friend. So asik begechalt, and then it's forbidden to have pleasure from his coal. But he could enjoy his flame. Again, these are not things of substance, and therefore it's not considered having hanav from something of his. Now that was the brisa. The Gemara asks on the brisa a discrepancy between two of the cases. Why is there a difference? Maishno shall have this desharia. Why is it that when it spoke about the flame of a Avodah Zarah, of an idol, where then it says it's totally permitted? And that is, even rabbinically, we didn't make a gzeira that we want you to stay far away from a Avodah Zarah, to say, like, even the flame, which is not really substance, we don't want you to have anah from it, because then you might come to have anah from actual Avodah Zarah. It doesn't say that. It says totally mutter to have anah from the flame. Now, why is it different than by the case of Hekdesh, where they said that initially it is Aser, and that is, there is a rabbinic, as it said, Loi Nanin. It says, Loi Moilin, there's no Me'ilah if you did have enough from the flame, but it says we're going to make a Gzer Drabana not to have enough even from the flame. What's the difference between Avodah Zarah or Hekdesh? Why over there by Avodah Zarah do we not make a Gzer, and by Hekdesh we do make? So the Gemara explains that Avodah Zarah de Me'isa, Avodah Zarah is considered repulsive to Jewish people. Ubedili Inchimnan, people stay far away from Avodah Zarah. Now therefore, Legoza Rabban, Rabban did not feel that it's necessary to make a gzera, decree, that, look, we want people to stay far away from this, although this flame is not of substance, but people, you're going to be having enough minutes of Avodah Zarah, you might come to enjoy actual objects. We're not concerned, because it's disgusting for people. So, we don't say that the flame is going to be aser. Hekdesh, deloy mois, beloy bedili inshiminei. But Hekdesh, which is not disgusting, it's regular things, to the contrary, it's holy things, and people don't stay far away from it. Now, as Rashi explains, people don't stay as far away from Hekdesh as Avodah Zarah. Because actually, by Hekdesh, it's not something that's disgusting. The reason why people stay away from it, and why we're not allowed to have enough from it, is because of the Issa, the prohibition of having enough from it. Now, although generally we say regarding unconsecrated things that people do stay away from Hekdesh, but again, in contrast to Avodah Zarah, they don't stay as far away as they would. And therefore, Gozer B'Rabbanan, that's why Rabbanan made a decree that we don't want people to start getting used to having enough from Hekdesh, because if we allow the flame, then he might enjoy the coal, and then he'll be chayiv and being over on the Issa of Me'ilah, and that's why we made a Gezer D'Rabbanan not to have a na, even from the flame, even though it's not a thing of substance. Now, we said in our Mishnah, one of the differences between the Gecheles and the Shalevis was Hamitzi Gecheles L'Shus Ram Chayiv. If someone transports a coal from the Rishus HaYachad to the Rishus Ram, he's going to be Chayiv. But the Shalevis Patab, however, on the flame, is going to be exempt. Now that the Gemara asks, but Tanya learned the Braisa that seems to contradict this. The Braisa says Hamitzi Shalevis Kolshu. If someone takes out a flame, however large that flame is, Chayiv, he's going to be Chayiv for Haitza. Our Mishnah says he's going to be Patar on Haitza and Shalevis, and here the Braisa says he's going to be Chayiv. So then Amar Rav Sheshes, he says, Kegoni Shetziu Bekesim. What we're talking about is that when did the Braisa say that you're going to be Chayiv? Is that when you transported the flame with a chip of wood. Now, since the flame has something that it's held on with, so that makes the flame a significant object. And our Mishnah that says you're going to be Pater is talking about, as the Gemara will later on explain, what's called Bida'ad Yaduye, where you lit it in Rishus HaYachid, right next to the Rishus Ram, and then you blew it, and then that made the flame fly from Rishus HaYachad to Rishus Ram, but it wasn't being taken with any object. Therefore, it's just a flame that's being transported. That's not something of substance. That you'll be potter, but the Braisa says you're going to be chayiv, is where you're holding it with something that's holding it. That will make the flame a significant thing because it has what it's being held onto. It has almost an anchor in the physical world. Therefore, you're transporting something of substance that you're going to be chayiv for. Now, the Gemara asks, if that's the case that the Braisa says you're going to be chayiv for the flame, but typically mishum kesem, then you should be liable just for the chip of wood itself. In other words, why did the Braisa say that if you take out a flame of any size, you're going to be chayiv on the flame? Even without the flame, you'll be chayiv for the kesem itself, for the chip itself. And that the Gemara answers, no, because we're talking about delesli shiura, that there is not a requisite amount of the chip of wood itself for the halachas of haitzah for Shabbos to be chayiv in it. That's not like learning the Mishnah Masechta Shabbos, there are minimums for the shiur of haitzah for different objects. In regard to a chip of wood, we learned Hamaiti Eitzim, if someone is taking out from one Rishos to another Rishos a piece of wood on Shabbos, it has to be Kedei Levashel Be'ekala. It has to be enough wood that could cook a very easily cooked egg, which is the easiest from all eggs to cook, which the Chacham, and as the Gemara there explains, talking about the egg of a chicken. Now, therefore, since you don't have that amount of wood, you'll be exempt on the wood. And that's what the Braisa is teaching, but you'll be chayiv even though the smallest amount, because generally the share of haitzah on Shabbos is what's significant for this object in its utility. Now, wood is only if it has a certain amount. A flame has utility, even the smallest flame already has that utility, so even the smallest share, you will be chayiv, and that's different than our Mishnah, because our Mishnah is talking about just a flame, which is not something of substance, but the Braisa is talking about that's being held on by something. Abaye Amar, Abaye says a different explanation for the Braisa, why one will be chayiv for transporting a shalheves when our Mishnah says you're going to be potter, is kigain de shayfei mana mishcha. For example, if you smeared a vessel with oil, the itli bein nura, and then you lit the oil with a fire. Now, since similar to the previous tarots, since it has something that it's being held on with, which is the utensil you're taking out with, so now the flame is considered significant. Now, why didn't Abaya say the same teretz that was said before regarding the chip of wood? So Rashi brings two interpretations, either because he didn't hold of the first answer, because since it's very little and it's going to go out very quickly, that's not something that you'll be chayiv even for the shalheves. Or actually, Abai is saying even a bigger chiddush, that even what's called a chas b'yama, just a shard of earthenware, where it's not even really held on to something with, so significantly you just smear it with oil, even that will be considered haitzah. So either because he doesn't hold to the first answer, or he does, but he's saying even a bigger chiddush. Now, on that, the Gemara answers similar questions that are asked on the first interpretation, that of Rav Sheshes. But for typically Mishamana, what do you have to say that that's the explanation of the Braisa that you'll be chai for the flame because it's being held on by something, but then you should be chai just for taking out the utensil, forget about the flame that's being held on to it. So that the Gemara answers, no, we're talking about b'chasma, we're talking about a shard, so it's not a mana, it's not a utensil, it's a broken piece of a utensil. Now, so the Gemara still asks, but tabulim b'chasma, but still you're taking out a significant shard, that itself you should be chayiv on for. And that the Gemara answer is similar to like it answered for the first teretz, b'dilas le'shira, where the piece of earthenware doesn't have its requisite shear for the chiv of itzah on Shabbos. There's not like l'nei mishum sech l'shabbos, where again, in every arena, we give a different shear depending on what the object is. And that is regards to cheres, regards to earthenware for the halachas of Eitzah and Shabbos, the minimum shear to be chayiv is kedei litein bein patzam lechaver. Is enough earthenware to put between one board and its other one, divrei b'yuda, that's a pin Rabbi Huda. And that is what they used to do was that they would organize the boards from the bottom going upwards. And it would be from two different directions. And sometimes it would be narrow on the width, and they had to put two of them side by side. And they had to make it even so that it shouldn't be one lower, one higher, so that it shouldn't be bending the boards. Now, when one of them was leaning towards the other one, so then they would have to put a piece of earthenware or a stone to make it even, to even it out. Or if, let's say, where they weren't equal in the width, so then they would separate it one with the other. And again, the purpose was that they would put these thin pieces of earthenware between them. If you have enough to use for the utility of separating the boards, that's the smallest amount that earthenware is usually used for. That would be the minimum share of considering this piece of earthenware significant. If you don't have that amount, then you're going to be exempt. And that's what the case of the Bryce is talking about. You have a flame on the piece of earthenware that's smaller even than that. So on the earthenware, you'll be a potter, but you'll be chayiv just for the shalheves. Now, but now the Gemara asks, Elohad etnan, but then how do we understand what we learned in our Mishnah? So we explained the Bryce, so why you're going to be chayiv, either because it's being held on by a piece of wood or by a piece of a shard of earthenware. So then anything that's being held on to something will be mechayiv on the shalheves, on the flame. But then when our Mishnah says, Hamiti shalheves pater, that when you're taking out the flame, you're going to be exempt, how do you take out a flame not holding it by something? You can't hold it in your hand. So obviously it's going to be held by something. So our Mishnah should also be chayiv. Now the Gemara says, no, actually, the case of our Mishnah is talking about that you're not taking it out with anything. But rather, it's that when you threw it, you blew it into Rosh Hashanah, and that's how you transport it from Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah. There, since the shalev is not being held on by anything, and the flame itself is not considered something of substance, that's the case that our Mishnah was saying, that you're going to be potter, but the case of that price is you're going to be chayv, is tomat, one of two answers, that it's being held on by something, and therefore, it's going to be significant enough to be chayv. Now the Gemara continues with the next Mishnah, again continuing on the theme of the previous Mishnah, is about the halachas of tchumen, of different objects, how they relate to whose tchum, who's considered the owner, what's the tchum of that object going to be for the halachas of Yom Tov. So the Mishnah tells us that, Bershal Yachid, Karagli HaYachid, a privately owned pit of water, that those contents will have the same tchum as the owner himself, and that is, no one could take that water, only as far as the tchum of the owner could go. Now, if this is not a privately owned pit of water, but rather it's the public well, then it goes karagli anshi oisir, then it goes as far as the people of that city could go, which means to say 2,000 amas in every direction from the city limits. The shal oili bavel, and regarding the pits of water that were made by those who come up from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael, which is they would travel on their way going up. So the people from Gullis needed water to feed their animals or for themselves when they're on the way up. So they would make these pits of water. So regarding those pits of water, from those who come up from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael, there the halacha will be karagli hamamali. They will have the tchum of the feet of whoever draws the water. Now the reason is because since those waters are hefker, they're ownerless, they were made for anybody. Now the halachas of hefker are that you acquire it when you pick it up. Now therefore the ramifications would be if let's say somebody goes and he draws the water, then he lends that water, in other words, he gives it to somebody else, that other one could only take it as far as the one who drew the water, because by drawing up the water, that hagbah is what's kind of the water for the person, and therefore it takes on his tchum, and the other person now is bound by his tchum. Now obviously, as Rashi explains, our Mishnah doesn't go like Rabbi Yechanan, who holds that cheftzi hefker, objects of hefker, actually acquire their own shvisa for themselves, which would limit everybody to the tchum of the well itself. Here we're saying not, it goes by the one who draws the water. Now, the question would be, why did our Mishnah use the terminology of karagli hamamali, like the limits of the tchum of the one who draws the water? It should have said, harehin karagli kol adam. It's like the tchum of anybody. Why did you use the terminology karagli hamamali? And that is what we explained, that since the Tana of our Mishnah holds that yesh breira, even lahachmer as a stringency, and that is we say that retroactively it was clarified that yesterday by Ben HaShemashes, it was the tchum of whoever's going to end up drawing that water, which therefore, when he draws that water, now if he lends it to somebody else, it doesn't take on whoever's tchum it is. It's the one who draws the water. We say it was his water, it just we didn't know what he was going to draw, but retroactively it's clarified that that was his water from Ben HaShemashes, and therefore it takes on his tchum. As the Gemara explains in Masechtas Erev and Daf Mem Beis, that our mission is not going like Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, who he holds that it's not karagli hamamali. The well of Hefker, well then it has its own tchum, as own objects that have no owner can only be taken 2,000 amas in every direction from the pit of the water itself. Now the Gemara asks the following question. Ramilei Rav Rav Nachman. Tnan, on the one hand, we learned in our Mishnah that a Bershel Yachid, correctly Yachid, the opening halacha in our Mishnah was that the pit of water of an individual has his status, which means to say that anybody wants to use that water could only take it as far of the owner himself. So let's say the owner made an Erev in one direction, you can't take it even one footstep in the other direction. Now that the Gemara has, but we learned in the Braisa that says, Nahoris HaMoshchen, which that means the rivers that flow. Now that's just a regular river, and that's how it goes, that it flows further away from where the water is coming from. And Umayonis HaNoivin, or the springs that flow, but the reason why I use a different terminology, not moishach, which means that it draws in a different direction, it just flows because it remains in the pit of where it is, it doesn't go out, but it also has a flow, just stays in its area. On those two types of bodies of water, the halacha is karehin karagli kolabim. So that in all cases will have the halachic status of whoever goes ahead and takes it, they could take it wherever they want to take it, which means to say, not even like we say karagli hamamale, it doesn't have any shvisa whatsoever. It doesn't have halachic boundaries of tchum. Not in its place where it was. Not even karagli abalam, not like the owner of these springs. And neither karagli hamamale, not like the one who draws it. Rather, anybody could take it wherever he himself could go. Now the reason for this is, which is related to the Gemara's answer, is because anything that's moving by Bein HaShemashes doesn't acquire a shvisa, as the Gemara explains in Masechtas Erevin, and Daf Mem Vav, Amar Aleph. So therefore, these types of Nahoris HaMoshchem, where it's flowing, or the springs that are constantly flowing, even though it stays in its own thing, but one thing we see is Karagli Kaladim. So how could our Mishnah tell us that the pit of an individual will have his limitations? If we see over here that bodies of water do not take on even Karagli Abilim, it's anyone can take it wherever they want to take it. That the Gemara answers, Amar Rabba says, as we alluded to this already in the explanation of that halacha and the Braisa, is Halacha Ma'iskina, what are we talking about in our Mishnah? We're talking about B'muchunasin. We're talking about that the water is gathered. You're right. Regarding the case of the Braisa, those are talking about that they're flowing. Anything that's moving by Ben HaShemashes doesn't acquire a Shavisa. It's not permanent to have that area. And therefore, anyone could take it wherever they want to, because it doesn't have its own tchum. It doesn't have those limitations. Our Mishnah is talking about that it's gathered, and therefore, since it's in one place, and therefore, it will be like a regular object, which will take on the tchum of its owner. Similarly, that we learned, our Mishnah is talking about that the water is gathered, therefore, it does acquire a shvisa, and since it's owned by an individual, it acquires the shvisa of that owner. Now, another halacha we learned in our Mishnah was, b'shal oili bavel karagla hamala. Regarding those pits of the waters that were made by those people that come up from Bavel, that they have along the road, that has the tchum of the one who draws the water. As we said, that because it's hefker, so when you pick it up, then that hagbah makes the kinyan. Now it takes on his tchum, and therefore if he lends it to somebody else, he would be limited to his tchum. Now the Gemara brings the following discussion related to this halacha of our Mishnah. Itmar was learned as follows. Now we know that if someone picks it up for himself, so it takes on his tchum, as we said, karagamala. But let's say, milei benosin lechaber. Let's say, he drew the water but he did it with the intention for his friend, as we said, because if he's filling it up for himself, then our Mishnah said clearly it would be Karagla Mamali. But let's say he's drawing it for his friend. So now we have a Machlaikis. Rav Nachman Amar, he says, Karagli Mishnas Malaloi, that it will have the halacha as the one that he filled it up for. It will have his tchum, because he was basically a shliach, and the shliach is kamaisa. He was a messenger for him. He wasn't drawing it for himself. Therefore, he acquired it for his friend. So now it takes on the tchum of the one that he drew it for, not his own tchum. Whereas Rav Sheshet Sama, he says, no, Karagli Mamal. Rav Sheshet says that, no, even though he drew it for his friend, it takes on his tchum, because he went and he picked it up, and he was kind it took on his tchum, and his friend would be limited to his tchum. The Gemara asks, B'mai Kamifu, so what is this machlek is based on? So the Gemara answers, Mar Savar, Rav Sheshet has held that Beirid Dehefkeruhu, the pit of water that we're talking about from the Oile Bavel, is considered ownerless. Now, if that's the case, there's halacha that says, Hamagbiya Mitzil Chaver, if someone wants to pick up an ownerless object that was found for his friend, the halacha is actually loy kana chaveri, as the Gemara explains in Masechet Bava Metzia and Daf Yoreh Aleph, that his friend will not acquire it, even though that was his whole intention, because that's what's called over there teifis lebachayv b'makom shachav lacher. You're grabbing something that although it's a merit for your friend who you want to be mezaket him, but it's a liability for everybody else, because everybody else is losing out on what you're trying to acquire from. So therefore, although we're allowed to do zechus shalei b'vanav, but since it's a chayv for others, we're not allowed to do that. And therefore, Rav Sheshet explains that the only one that's going to be acquiring it is the one that's picking it up, because he cannot be maknit for others. And therefore, it will take on his tchum. However, Umar Savar of Nachman held that Beir Deshut Fihi. Actually, the pit of the Oile Bavel was not considered ownerless. They didn't make it hefker. Rather, they gave all the Jewish people a shear in this water. So it's not like an ownerless thing that whoever wants to take could take. Rather, all the Jewish people are considered partners. Now, therefore, when this person says that he's going to fill up water for him, essentially what he's doing is that he's a shliach for him to go get his water, that he has a rightful shear in it. And therefore, that's not in the category of magbiya mitzil chaver. You're right, an ownerless object, one cannot pick up for his friend. Therefore, the only kin you'd be having would be your own, and therefore would have your own limitations. Rav Nachman says, this is not a hefker water. This is, everyone has a shear in it. And therefore, I can go get his shear for him. And therefore, since I'm doing his shlichus, it's his water, and therefore it has his tchum. And therefore, it's going to be like the ragli mishun ismaliloi, and not like karagli hamamali. But now the Gemara asks, Esve Rav or Rav Nachman? Now, however, Rav asks on the interpretation we just gave for Rav Nachman, where we said that he understands that the beira of the oily bavel, with their pits, are not considered ownerless. Rather, they're considered partners in that. He asked from him on the following Mishnah Masechtas Nedarim. The Mishnah Nedarim brings that if someone says, Harini alecha cherem, if someone tells his friend, says, look, I am a cherem upon you, then Hamudr, the one that he placed the oath on, becomes usur to have anah from the person that made the neder on him. Because basically he was telling them, say, my money, all my resources are forbidden on you like hektish. So therefore he's forbidden to have anah from him. Now we continue on to Amud Beis. Let's say he says the other way around. Hare ata alai cherem. You are cherem upon me. Which basically he was saying that all your money is on me like regular charamim, which all go to bedek habayis, which basically that yours is on me like hektish. Now, therefore, hanoidir aser, the one who made the oath is forbidden to have enough from the friend that he made the oath forbidding his stuff from him on osa. Now, how is that possible? How he can make someone else's object forbidden? So, as Rashi explains, it's not actually making it forbidden, but it's based on the pasuk of lo yachal devarit. He's not allowed to violate his words that he himself made, and therefore he can take a binding oath not to have a hana from his friend's money. Now, it doesn't actually take effect in the object itself, but his words go ahead and bind him that he cannot go ahead and have hana from him. Now that was in either direction. Now let's say he says hareini alecha ba'ato alai. Let's say he says that I am upon you and you upon me. That there's a cherem two ways. Then they're both forbidden to have anah from each other. Again, he can't have anah from him because he says he's a cherem on him. And the other one can't have anah from him because he made it his objects, which he does have dominion over, that usher to his friend. However, umutarin bishal oile bavel, they are permitted to have hanah from the objects of the people that they make these things coming up from bavel, which the b'nei gaila made. Now, the reason is because the people from Galus, when they would come up, they made all these things hefker for the entire Jewish people and let everyone go ahead and use it. And not that everyone are considered partners in it, because if they were partners in it, then he would be able to make his part forbidden on his friend, and his friend would then be forbidden to have from his part. And therefore, regards to the things of the Oila bubble, they both could have enough from, because it's hefker, there's no partnership in it. But Vasur Mishalei Seir, that both are now forbidden to have enough from the things that are made from the municipality, from the things of the city where they live in, because they're both partners in those things. And now each one is forbidden to have enough from it because of his friend's chelik in that parts of the city. Now, the Mishnah says these are the things that are considered from Oila Bavel where they're both permitted to have enough from them because they're hefker, and they're not partners to be forbidden because of the other one's shear in it, which are Harabais, the Temple Mount, Halashachais, the different chambers, Vazaris in the courtyards, Ubar, Shalem Tzaderech, and regarding the pit that we were speaking about that's in the middle of the road, which they made on the way up, these were all made by the Oila Bavel, and therefore these things are considered Hefker, and therefore even if someone makes an oath on his friend, a two-way oath, they'll still both be able to have enough from it. Whereas Ve'elohin Shalei Sa'ir, these are considered the things of the city where they would be forbidden because they're considered partners in those things. Ahar Chayv, the main street, Ubeis HaKnesses, the shul, Ubeis HaMechetz, in the bathhouse. Now, this the Gemara concludes the question on Rav Nachman. Ve'i Amar, then we're going to say, as the Gemara explained for Rav Nachman, that Be'ri Deshut Ve'hi, that the pit of the Oile Bavel are considered their partners, and therefore, since they're partners, it's not a problem of Hamagbi Metzi L'Chaveri, Kona Chaveri, which is not allowed because it's considered Chayv L'Acherim. Here it's not a thing of Hefker, but rather it's their partners, and that's why Rav Nachman said that he's allowed to go out and pick up for his friend, and therefore takes on the Tchum of his friend. But then Amai Mutter, then why would these two people who made this one person made a two-way oath be permitted to have enough from the things of Oile Bavel? But right now we're learning the Mishnah Masechet in Zadarim that says Hashutafin Shenadru Hanozemizer, regarding partners that made an oath forbidding each other, then Asrum Likanes Lichatzer, then they're not allowed to go into a courtyard. Now, therefore, essentially the Gemara's question is, regarding when it's something of partnerships which they own together, this chatzer, then it will be forbidden. So therefore, if you're saying that the bar of the Oile Bavel are they considered partners in it? So how can we say that the things of the Oile Bavel, they're allowed to go ahead and both enjoy, if again, it's a thing of Hashutfis? And as we see, things of partnership, each one's share will make it forbidden on the other. So why did we say that's Mutter? Obviously, it's because it's considered Hefker, not like Rav Nachman. So that the Gemara answer is no. Lirchitz bebar, the Girsa takes out the next word, Lirchitz, is Hachanami. You're right, to bathe oneself in the pit, that would be forbidden, as we said, because it's considered that of Shutfin. And that would even apply to the things of the Oile Bavel. But V'hachamai Eskin, to hear that we're talking about, that we said in this Mishnah Masechet Nedarim, that the pit in the middle of the road are permitted for both, even though they have a two-way oath forbidding each other, was not for all utility that's permitted. For example, to go down and bathe inside of it, because actually it's a bar of shutfin of partners, which would be forbidden, because then each one would be having hanav and the other one's shearing that whole all the water. Rather, when they said it's permitted was lamales, was to go ahead and draw the water from that pit, which is permitted. And the reason is because we rely on the concept of brera, of retroactive clarification. And we say, the mar mididei kamamali. Say, when this one's drawing the water, he was drawing the water from his shear. In other words, what ended up coming into his jug is retroactively clarified from Shemayim that was really his shear in it. And I'm not taking anything of his shear. Umar mididei kamamali, and he's filling up from his shear. So Rav Nachman is not difficult to Rav Nachman, because although it is of Shutfin, and Shutfin are forbidden each other, but that's a difference by a courtyard, a chatzer, where you can't say the halacha abreira, because it's the whole chatzer, therefore you can't go in. But here, when you're drawing water, we could say that breira retroactively clarified that you didn't take anything of his shear. You're right, his shear wouldn't make it aser, but here we know that it was only your part, and that's why it's mutter. However, the Gemara asks that this teretz relies on the fact of saying the principle of breira to resolve Rav Nachman regarding this mission of Masechtas Nedarim. But the Gemara asks, but sir, Rav Nachman yesh breira? But does Rav Nachman even hold to the concept of breira, thereby answering how it could be that regarding the pit of the Oile Bavel, each one could take if they're considered shutfin? But Tanan, we learn the mission of Masechtas Shkolim that says, ha'achin, regarding brothers that are ha'shutfin, that are also partners in the inheritance of their father. So it depends regarding two areas of halacha, each one interdependent on the other one. That is, kishchayiv bekalban, when they're liable in the kalban, then peturim ma'aser behemah, then they're exempt from the ma'aser, the tenth of every animal to give. However, when they're liable in the chiyuv of giving the tenth of every animal, then paturim in the kalb, and then they're exempt from the chiyuv of giving the kalb. And that is, we're discussing two different halachas that are interdependent on each other. And that is, every single Jewish person has to give a machtza shekel, a half a shekel, every year for the kabbanis tibur, which is a carbon tamid every day, and there's a carbon musaf. Now, the chachamim made another obligation added on to this machtza shekel, that you have to add another small coin called a kalbin. And the reason is because the half a shekel is a very thin coin which is easily lost, and sometimes actually that they would be used to interchange the shekel for a machtza shekel. Now therefore you have to add on a kalbin for the changing of the currency, which is something that has to be charged. Now, and that is, therefore you have to add another small price to the machtza shekel, which is called the kalbin. Now even when actually two people join together and they give a shekel together, where you would say that they're not changing the shekel to get a machzah shekel because they're paying for two people, still the Chacham said you still have to give two kalbinim. And the reason is we don't want you to have to pay less than everyone else that's paying that extra kalbin and thereby causing a loss for hektish. So therefore, even if you're giving a full hektish for a full mana, a full shekel for both people, you still have to pay the extra kalbin for both people. However, a father that pays a shekel for two of his sons, he's exempt from the second kalbin. That's one area of halacha that we're discussing over here. So therefore, it would depend when one's giving something, is it two separate people that are joined together? Then they would be chayiv in the second kalbin. Or is it one person who it's all his money that's paying for two people, but again, coming from the same source of the father, let's say two sons, then they'd be pater from the second kalbin. Another halacha we're discussing is maaser behema, which the tenth of every animal applies every single year by the new animals that are born. Now, however, when there's a flock of partners, then the partners are exempt of the new children having to give Maaser Behema. As the Gemara brings a Braisa Masechtas Bechairis, that it says in the Pasuk, Kol Peter Sheger Behema Ashiyah Lecha, which is an individual, but and not of Shutvin. Actually, partners are going to be exempt from the Halacha Maaser Behema. Now, although the Gemara there asks that Pasuk is not talking about Maaser Behema, it's talking about the Halacha Bechar of the firstborn animal, but the Gemara there explains that if that pasuk cannot be talking about Bechar, because actually Bechar is obligated even when it's partnership, because there's another pasuk that says, Uvechar is Bekarchem Mitzaynchem, which says in the plural. So therefore, the Gemara there says that it's talking about the halachas of Maaser. Now, there the Gemara explains that I would think that this exemption of when there's partners involved, that then they're exempt from the halachas of Maaser Behema, that would apply even by what's called Tfisas HaBayis. Now, Tfis HaBayis means to say, for example, if let's say you have brothers that did not yet split up the inheritance that they had from their father, and regarding all the children that are born from that flock, you would think that they would still be exempt because they're partners, they're not one person, and we said partners are exempt from Maaser Behema. That's what the Gemara brings over there, the Pasuk Tamalama Yiyah. We learn from Yiyah that actually that when there's the halacha of even though they're partners, but it's coming from Tfusas HaBayis, it's still the father's inheritance. It's one person that it wasn't yet subdivided. Then actually they're going to be chayv because it is considered that of an individual, not of partners. Now, therefore, the ramifications are as follows. If you have brothers that are partners, which means to say that they became partners after they had already divided the inheritance. For example, they went back and then rejoined after they already split up. So for them, the halacha is that they're chayiv in the kalbin, because essentially they're like any two people, even though it came from one inheritance, but they split it up. Then they joined back again. So like two different partners, they have to pay when they're coming with a full shekel, have to pay the kalbin, as we explained. But they will be exempt in such a case from Maaser Behema, because again, they're just like regular partners, where when there's real partners, there's no tfisas habayis. It's not coming from the father's inheritance, because they already split that up. They then on their own came and rejoined again, so therefore, then they will be exempt from Maaser Behema, because they are really partners. Whereas the inverse is, when they're chayv Maaser Behema, for example, in the case where they were partners by default because of the inheritance of their father, where they never yet split it up, they still have the original estate as it was, then they're going to be exempt from the kalbin, because then it's as if the father is still alive, because his money is still one, and therefore they're going to be exempt when they're going to be giving the shekel together. So therefore we see the interdependency of these two things, because when you are really from one estate, then you're exempt from the kalbin, but then you're going to be chayv in Maaser Behema. When you're really two different partners joined together, then it's going to be pater in Maaser Behema, and then you'll be chayv in the kalbin. Now, that's what the Mishnah Maseches Shkolim said. Now, regarding the explanation and the definition of that Mishnah, we have a machlekes. Rav Anan said, the loy shanu, we didn't learn that because you already split it up and then you're rejoining again, that then you lose the halacha of estate, of being one money. And therefore, rather, you're going to be like considered like partners, which again, we said has ramifications of that you'll be exempt from Ma'aseh Behema, but you'll be chayv and kalban. That was only said, gedoyim keneged tloyim. If when it was originally split up, before they then rejoined, was you had kid goats that were then relative to the lambs, or v'tloyim keneged gedoyim, where that what the basic idea was that they estimated the value of different animals, but they didn't split up evenly every type that each one got one of each. Rather, he got this type and he got this type. In other words, he got kid goats, he got lambs. Then that totally loses the estate's name on that. And rather, that means to say each one has a status of lekuches, of purchases. Therefore, then, because it's essentially a barter system, because inheritance means to say each one should get evenly of what the estate has. If he ends up taking one type and he takes another type, then means to say they bartered, say you could have my share in what that should be, and I'm taking your share in that one. Now, therefore, when they then rejoin again, so it's like when you have two different purchases that purchase objects in the marketplace, and then they join together, there's no name of the estate over there. Rather, they're like partners. That's when the Mishnah said, Masechet Shkalim, that then they're going to be Chayv and the Kalban, because like two separate partners. Avol Cholku Gedoyim Keneged Gedoyim. But Ravana explains, if let's say when they originally split the estate, he got kid goats related to how many kid goats he got. V'tloyim Keneged Tloyim, and he got lambs correlated to how many lambs he got. Which essentially that is the halacha of a Yerusha of inheritance, that each one gets something from every single type that there is. Then Omer Zehu Chelka Magia Mishor Rishon Lekach. Then we would say that this is his portion that originally he should have gotten. In other words, what that means is, we utilize the concept of brera, of retroactive clarification. Therefore, we say that the estate's name is still on it, because this is what the Yerusha is, that originally when the father dies, we say that it's earmarked for everyone to get a portion in everything that there is. When they ultimately do split it exactly as that is, when they go back and rejoin again as partners, what they're just doing is they're putting back the pieces together again. They're bringing the estate back to what it was, because you never lost it. You never had lekuches. No one ever purchased. We never bartered. We had it. It's like almost taking a puzzle, taking it apart, and putting it right back again together again. Whereas if they switched it, they did gedoyim keneged tloyim, then they already mixed it up, and you can't put that back together again. And therefore, in such a case, he says that they would not be chayav in the kalban. They would actually be potter, because you would still have the halach of tefis abayis if they come back together again. Rav Nachman Amahi argued in Ravan, and he said, "Afilu chalku gedoyim keneged gedoyim v'tloyim keneged tloyim." Even if it was evenly split as the halachas of Yerusha, ein oimer zeh chalka hamagiyim eshor shalakach. We do not say that this is exactly what it originally was, as if we're putting the pieces back together again, and that they should be potter from the kalban. We say, no, you already lost that, and the reason is, obviously, and this is the Gemara's question, that obviously Rav Nachman does not hold of Breira. Because if he held of Breira, then you should say, oh, retroactively clarify that this is exactly as things should have been, and therefore we're back to where we started, and therefore they should be exempt from the Kalban. He says no. He says that we don't view that as this is what it originally was, and how do I know that this is what I was supposed to get? Maybe that's what you were supposed to get, which is if you don't say Breira. And therefore, he says that you're always going to be chayv in the kalban when they rejoin together again. Now, the question is, the whole answer for Rav Nachman from the question in the Masechtas Nedarim regarding the pit of the Oyel Bavel, which he defined, as the Gemara has said on Amud Aleph, because they're bar of shutfin, and that's why when one draws for his friend, it will take on his friend's tchum, because it's not that of hefker. But if that's the case, we wanted to know, then how is it that the Mishnah says in Masechtas Nedarim that even if the neder was two ways, that each are forbidden from the other, they could both enjoy the water from the Oyel Gaila, from the Oyel Bavel, if they're considered shutfin? And we learn in the Mishnah Masechtas Nedarim says that by shutfin, it's aser. So we wanted to say that, oh, because by the water it's different in the case of a chatzar, because by water you could say retroactively it's clarified that this is just my shear, it's not your shear. You're right, if I went bathing in it, I'm for sure having enough from your shear, that would be aser. But the Gemara is asking, you see, clearly Rav Nachman does not hold of Breira. So then the Gemara says that Ella, rather, the Kuli Alma Ber Def Keri. Actually, it's not like we had originally posited in Anamid Aleph, that even Rav Nachman, you have to say, holds that the pit of water of the Oile Bavel is Hefker and not that of partnership. And the reason is from the fact that the Mishnah Masechtas Nedarim says that if someone takes a neder hanaf from the other one, there's going to be mutter. And you can't say, as we had proposed, that even though it's partnership, it's mutter because of brera, because Rav Nachman doesn't hold the brera. So therefore, we're back to the question, so then why does, if it's considered that of Hefker, so why does Rav Nachman hold that if someone picks up for his friend that takes on his tchum, if that would be, seemingly, ha-megbi mitzila chaveh, which is loikon chaveh, and therefore it should take on his own tchum. So rather, the Gemara says, elahocha, rather what we're talking about over here, is that everybody holds that you're not going to be acquiring when you pick it up for your friend. As we said, because since it's chav la-cherim, so the friend will not acquire it when you pick it up for him. However, the question is not so much as in, will he acquire it when I pick it up? Because that for sure will not. So then the question then becomes, so why can't Rav Nachman, will it take on his tchum and not the person who picked it up? Because actually the machlekes is the person himself who picked it up. Did he acquire it when he picked it up? And that is b'magbiya mitzila chaveri komifugi. We're arguing regarding when someone picks up something for his friend, we're arguing if the person himself in the first place acquires it. And that is Mar Savar, that is Rav Sheshes holds, Kana. Actually, the one who picks it up first, he is acquiring it because he's doing a kin hagbah, he's elevating it, which acquires something from Hefker. And therefore his friend ends up getting it from him, and therefore it takes on the tchum of what's called Ragla Mamali, like the one who picked it up. And therefore that's why he said it's going to be limited to his tchum. However, Mar Savar of Nachman held the loy Kana. Actually, the one who picks it up will not be kainit. Now the reason is because when he picked it up, his intention wasn't to acquire it for himself. His whole intention was that I'm filling it up for my friend who he wants. I'm picking it up for him. Now therefore, although you're right, the friend's not either being kainit because hamagbi mitzila chaver is loikon chaveroi. But however, when his friend ultimately gets it, he picked it up for him. He's waiting till he comes. They put it on the side for him. Now, when his friend gets it, that's when his friend will acquire it, because when we said that his friend's not going to acquire it, his friend's not acquiring, but he himself is not acquiring, so no one acquired it. So only when his friend gets it will he acquire it. Now, because regarding this halacha of that maybe the person himself acquired it, the person could only say that I picked it up for myself only when it's still in his possession. But when the other person actually gets it, the Mishnah explains over there in Maseches Bava Metzia that if when he already gave it to him, he says, hey, wait a second, I acquired it already for myself, he didn't say anything. And therefore, this case, ultimately, what it comes down to is, you're right, everyone agrees, but the question is the one who's picking it up being acquiring it? Because his intention is not for himself. Sheshet says he did acquire it, and therefore it would be limited to his tchum. Rav Nachman, although everyone agrees that the bar is a bar of Hefker, holds that he didn't acquire it, and he himself didn't acquire it, and therefore, since there's no acquisition, when the other one ultimately ends up taking it, that's when he acquires it, and that's why he takes on the tchum of the Ragla Mishnah Esmalalai, not because it was acquired to him when the person picked it up, because he did a shlichus, but rather because when he ultimately takes it, he's the first one taking possession, and that's why he takes on his tchum.